Today we'll tell you how Alexander Rossi slayed the demons, ended a three-year win streak, and summoned a little bit of the spirit of cycling champion Jean Robic, all in one episode. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Of all the references we've put in an intro of a Motorsport 101 episode, that might be the most obscure, and we've done 385 of these bad boys.
That's right. King would be so proud.
We hit him with a cycling reference in a motorsport podcast. Go up. We're cultured. We are cultured. What can I say? Welcome to episode 385 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. And I'm going to be completely real with you on this one, on the intro. There's only two of us in here. It's a cozy episode.
Yeah.
Me and RJ are snuggling on the couch as we speak. On this.
You got any more popcorn over there?
Oh yeah.
Pass that over this way.
Yeah, yeah. Sweet and salty. It's my favorite. I got the
Annemiek van Vleuten won the Tour de France Femmes.
Oh yeah.
They finished on a massive hill climb, but unfortunately today we're not a cycling podcast. We're here to talk about the race that is officially called the Gallagher Grand Prix at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course. For editorial purposes, I'm RJ O'Connell. My publication does not refer to these races by their sponsor name, so it's the Brickyard Grand Prix. It's the Grand Prix at Indy that happens during the NASCAR Brickyard weekend. And boy, the NASCAR race was interesting. We had plenty of public lobby moments.
I must admit, I didn't see all of this because I was at work on this one. A rare time. I've been very fortunate at the bookies. I've not had to close on a Sunday recently. But I did see the overtime, and I did see Kyle Larson turn his car accidentally into a torpedo, which was a very scary one. Luckily, Kyle was okay. Also, the fact that that Hendrick basically threw his man under the bus by saying, "Oh no, it definitely wasn't a brake failure," which okay. I must admit, I had the big eyeball opening up emoji on that one when I saw that tweet.
So, a lot of us were gathered in the Discord watching the race, and Zoe was like constantly cheering for like death. Not actual death, by the way.
Of course.
I just want to point that out there, but just like any amount of carnage in a turn one in these big, heavy stock cars. And at the end of the race, we got it because, you know, that's NASCAR road racing in a nutshell.
Yeah, it really was. We had Blaney, who we were all rooting for to keep the possibility of breaking the playoff format over its knee by having 17 race winners. We came so close, we flew too close to the sun because Blaney got spun out, immediately took revenge. That was quite funny. And to make it even funnier, we had Ross Chastain challenging for the win after, as Spencer Hall put it on Twitter, opting out of turn one.
I love the Ross Chastain villain arc in NASCAR.
And the funny thing is about Ross Chastain is that, one, he seems like a really, really nice guy.
Like, he's genuinely, yeah, he is nice, and he has never forgotten his roots and the struggle that has taken him to get there. And it's great that he's finally enjoying the success at the top level of NASCAR that many people felt should have been owed to him many, many years before this. Because he's had his massive setbacks.
Part of me loves him for that. The other part of me is like, you're becoming discount Joey Logano, and I don't like it. Like, this, the fake sincerity of, like, knowing he's screwing up and rubbing people the wrong way and then basically acting like he's feigning innocence. I don't like it.
Don't worry, Kyle. I got my other face on today. That was NASCAR. IndyCar's Brickyard Gallagher. God's only Matt Chilton sacrificed his IndyCar career to go chase some hill climb records and make all this possible. And wouldn't you know it, after three long years, Alexander Rossi is back in victory lane. And then 70, and then several days later, it's tainted.
Yeah, again, we got lucky on the being like pseudo journalists here, like, and obviously timing these podcasts being recorded. Like, only about 3 hours before this recording took place, the news dropped that Alex Rossi's win is only going to be scored at about 60% of what it should be because he's been docked 20 championship points and fined $25,000. And we'll tell you why in a minute, but if you're paying attention to the intro, you'll certainly know why. We'll get into that regarding the Gallagher Grand Prix at the Brickyard as part of the NASCAR IndyCar doubleheader. It was a tepid. We'll be honest with you here. It wasn't the most riveting.
It was fine. It was fine. One of those where, like, as someone who writes race reports on these as part of their job, it's just like, oh yeah, this is the easy stuff because nothing's happening. I could draft like a half to two thirds of this and not have to worry about deleting the whole thing. But from the perspective of entertainment, yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a solid 5 out of 10 Grand Prix. They can't all be winners, kid, as I often tell people. And yeah, like in it, Alex Rossi back in the winner's circle. This was a 47 race winless streak for Alex Rossi. Nearly like over 3 years since the last.
Over 3 years.
We talked about it last week. The last time Alex Rossi won a race was the 2019 Grand Prix at Road America. And he's had a few near misses. I think he's had about 6 podiums since then, but not a win.
8 podiums since then.
8. Wow, there you go. So, like, he was going for the full Johann Zarco here of everything but winning. But, yeah, this was a first dub. And even then, it came with conflicting talk. We'll talk about that and the nature of Andretti as a whole very, very shortly. We'll also talk about the fact that there was a surprising man in second, and that was Christian Lundgaard. Christian Lundgaard is a monster around this track. He really
is. The first legitimately breakout rookie performance of the season.
Second. Magnificent drive from Christian Lundgaard. He was the only man who you could stay with Rossi the whole way on strategy and had the pace to stay with him pretty much the whole way through. Didn't ever get close enough to challenge Rossi for the win, but a phenomenal drive from Christian Lundgaard. The first rookie on the podium this year. The first time an RLL car has been on the podium, I believe, all season long. And
it's been over a year since they got one of their cars on the podium. It was Graham Rahal, third at the second Texas race last year.
Jesus Christ, that is not what you think of a team of that quality and resources. Santa Claus was down there, Mr. Letterman himself, and he was delighted. They interviewed him during the NASCAR race, and they were like, yeah, you know, our boys were second and seventh because Graham was seventh. You know, 2.720. We'll take that, was what he basically said. So yeah, a phenomenal performance from Lundgaard, but it did also get me thinking on a deeper level about the state of play in the junior ladder. There's been a lot of rumours recently. Marshall Pruitt put out another one of his fascinating silly season updates last week for Racer.com, which is always captivating reading. I do highly recommend if you haven't already to read them, because I know a lot of people were surprised when I mentioned this on Twitter a couple of days ago regarding certain names that are being teased for that for certain seats in the future. We'll get into that in the second half of the show. But real quick, we'll find places you can find us real quick. We are YouTube. We're on YouTube and Facebook, Motorsport 101. You can find us on there. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. You can find us on there. Our personal handles at Harrison101HD and RJ at RJ O'Connell. Cam, who isn't with us on this one, he'll be back next time round. He's at CBuckley917. So yeah, check us out on there. As I mentioned, Motorsport101 Pod on Instagram. We're also on our website, motorsport101.com, with written blogs on all the carnage to have come through the last week of F1 silly season, the Hungarian Grand Prix, and this race at the Brickyard itself. So all of that.
You know what's wild is that we've had developments in the ongoing Alex Palou Chip Ganassi legal fight that seem to indicate this course might escalate to the federal level.
Yeah.
And for once, we don't have a full segment laid out for that.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's bad. It's bad because
We have no further updates until it is resolved. I mean, we're still going to mention every once in a while, but
yeah,
it may be worth checking back like once we get a full resolution.
Indeed, yeah. The latest update essentially has it going to the federal level, and Alex Palou apparently may countersue for defamation. Which, oh boy. good. Have fun with them apples is what my first thought was. Because, God, I know from my brief time in doing my degree in broadcast journalism and studying law in journalism that defamation suits are pretty damn tricky to prove. So good luck on that one is what I say to Alex. Yeah.
I mean, hey, it could be worse. Your lawyers could just give away like evidence that would completely shoot your case full of holes like 12 days prior to you taking the stand.
So RJ, do you know where your phone is right now? Just asking for a friend.
It's right in my hands.
Good. Make sure it stays there. Alex Jones, I'm looking at you.
See, the key to making sure that this does not happen is to always be online.
Always.
At all times.
Always. Never log off. Never log off. Like we had
now that we're on the same brain cell.
Should we talk about the Brickyard?
Let's talk about the Big Machine Spiked Coolers Grand Prix. No, wait, that's not it. The Gallagher Grand Prix. So Alexander Rossi finally gets the W.
Wait.
First time since 2019 Road America. Because at that time we were all thinking these wins should come easy for him, and then after that he just never won again. We thought maybe he's struggling with the aero screen and the added weight. Maybe he's just fallen off. Maybe he's just unlucky. Who knows what it was, but he finally got that first win he's been looking for a long, long time. Mm. He inherited the lead after Colton Herta put himself in position to win and then had a terminal gearbox failure.
Oof.
That has cost him yet another victory, yet another finish, yet more huge points. Look. That preseason pick for the championship, that's done at this point.
Yeah.
I did think it was funny that Dre, what was it you said about his post-race comments?
I gave Alex Rossi an award in shithousery. Subscribe to Niren on YouTube. It's at the FNG because I have borrowed the meme from him, and he's one of the finest if you're into your soccer, well worth a subscription. He's a very funny man and former F1 guy, now with Team Quadrant. I'm very proud of him, our boy Niren. So check him out at FNG. But I gave him an award in shithousery. And I gave him an award in shithousery because he said, yeah, I feel for Colton afterwards. I feel for Colton. And no one believed him. When James Hinchcliffe is on the mic, seconds before his victory, saying, do not text him. Congratulations that he won the race. He will not read it. He will not open it. I was like, that just seems to be the Alex Rossi experience at this point. It was the most insincere I feel for Colton I have ever heard.
Did you watch the post race conference when somebody asked him, like, I think one person asked, you know, your time's coming to end at Andretti Autosport soon. Remember, this is the only team he's ever known since he got to IndyCar.
Right.
Because this was the old Brian Herta Autosport seat that got folded into Andretti Autosport when he came in. Mm-hmm. So someone asked him, you know, your time's coming to end soon. What'll be your favorite memory? And then Rossi, without missing a beat, he just says, well, that time in Mid-Ohio sure was a memory. Before giving the real answer of, you know, winning the Indianapolis 500. In 2016 as a rookie.
Like, I love that was the first thought that he had. He's such a fucking troll. He's so good at it. Like, honestly, it's just, he's completely leaned into the bit of being the miserable one, and it just works, and people love him for it. I mean, I've never understood that personally, but hey, different horses for different courses, we say in England. But yeah, Alex Rossi, this was a 47 race long duck. He finally got the win, and then, as mentioned in the intro, as we found out a couple of hours ago, he's been docked 20 points and fined 25 large. Because
this dropped 96 out, more than 96 hours after the victory. But
yeah,
I got the official news release that IndyCar announced a post-event infraction, fining Andretti Autosport $25,000, penalizing the team 20 entrant and driver points, after the number 27 car of Alexander Rossi was found in violation of the following in post-race inspection. The minimum weight shall include the car in ready-to-compete condition, excluding driver, driver equivalency weight, fuel, and drink bottle content, as well as the minimum weight for road and street events, 1,700 pounds. Mm. IndyCar president Jay Fry said, from a sporting perspective, the car met minimum requirements. From a technical perspective, the way they achieved the weight is not allowed. To meet minimum weight, the drink bottle and its contents were used as car ballast, which is not permitted and why the team is being fined and penalized. The Jean Robic reference was not out of thin air. This was a guy who famously pedaled with drinks bottles filled with mercury or lead designed to increase his weight downhill sections. And this became commonplace in cycling. I actually had to dig through the archives to find that. But Rossi lost the points. Andretti Autosport lost, you know, a small chunk of money. But he gets to keep the credit for the victory. Mm. So out of that vacuum, we can go back out of the vacuum and then back into it. What, Dre, what'd you make of this win?
Well, first and foremost,
Before all this,
it's nice to see Jacques Tourcier at his best again. This has been coming. You know, look, I've said it before. These are genuine free-tool weapon. Like, he can win any format that IndyCar throws at him. I said this back in 2019, that I thought he was the best all-round driver in the series. He could win at any oval, any street course, any road course. He was that good. You know, he was pulling off Marquez level saves under the wheel on numerous occasions. Alex Rossi was that dude. So to see him back at something like his best, where basically after Herta's car died, he was untouchable. Yeah, mad impressive. Like, it's good. Like, it's a more fun series when the anti-hero is at the front of the field. I like that. I think the sport needs some of that sometime, because I think the sport is often very kumbaya about its personalities. And you know, I've said it before, it's got the whiff of a boys club about it, IndyCar. So to have the anti-hero win, I'm all for that. But it did come at Colton Herta's expense. And yeah, this should have been a 1-2. This should have been a 1-2. It's only a 1. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure they'll still be delighted they won this race. But Colton Herta got fucked again. I just, like, it's the third race in a row he's encountered shenanigans that really weren't on him. Yes, he drove over a curb, but 99 times out of 100, nothing happens. Certainly nothing that breaks a gearbox. I mean, holy shit. I mean, that's just so unlucky. And
yeah,
it just sums up the vibe I feel about Andretti at the moment, where it's even when it's going well, it's still a mess. And yeah, like,
it could easily be an Andretti Autosport 1-2 that we're talking about
here. And they need one of them. They have not been good this season. Dude,
Romain Grosjean, who up to this point has been guaranteed money at the road course, had a terrible weekend.
He was awful. He was awful. And look, people will not realize this until I looked up the standings. Romain Grosjean is 14th in the championship this year.
Romain Grosjean is a low-key floppy contender. And it's not even, I don't even know what happened there.
Yeah,
I don't
know. And people were like, look, a certain former co-host we had back at Long Beach was adamant that Grosjean was the leader in his team now. He's 14th in the standings and has had one podium finish for the whole year. Mm-hmm. One. And that was at Long Beach. He's not been on the podium since. And he wrecked his own 500. Like,
Colton Herta's bad luck is putting him out of the super license window. Let's not forget that. He had to finish. Yeah.
I think he's 100 points off now.
It's over. He's more than 100 points out of the lead. Like, he would basically have to win every race and then hope everybody else in front of them has to have a terrible finish to the end of the season just for him to squeak by with what would get him the minimum number of super license points to qualify for an F1 seat. And now Alex Palou and Oscar Piastri are in the window. So, you know, ultimately, I don't think Colton Herta is going to begrudge if he loses out on an F1 opportunity too much, especially if he goes on to have the success that we all think he's going to have.
Yeah.
But, man, that's just a bummer.
It is a bummer.
Still giving him time.
It is
still
a bummer.
Still giving him time because he is just 22.
I was like, it is a bummer. And look, a lot of Colton's lack of success this year is not on him. The big one was the 500. That's the one that really did him over for the season. And that one, unfortunately, was on him. And, you know, despite that, he still had other shenanigans go against him that I wouldn't necessarily say was him. But this is the state of Andretti. Alex Rossi is back to something near his best, but he's leaving at the end of the year after he directly caused a blow-up within the team. Colton Herta, who was, and I still think is, their headlining driver at Andretti, the number 26 car, has had an awful season by his standards. Grosjean, who, again, they were putting this dude on a fucking plinth. They gave him the 28 DHL flagship car for this season, and he's 14th on the year. And Devlin DeFrancesco has been so bad that they're now actively looking to get him out of that 29 seat at the end of the year when Andretti called him a, quote, multi-year project when they chose him over Carl Kirkwood for the seat earlier this year.
Yikes.
They called him a multi-year project. And they
want
to bail.
Even if they didn't, yeah. This, we kind of alluded it. Let's just rip the band-aid off. They've slipped out of the big three. They slipped out of the big three relative to Ganassi and Penske in terms of being able to deliver this kind of performance consistently. Now, they've got three Indianapolis 500 wins in the last decade. Don't get me wrong. No terrible, terrible team flukes their way to three Indy 500 wins in the last decade.
Right.
But in terms of consistently competing for championships, you know, it's bad that I kind of forgot that Colton Herta won a race earlier this season. I thought they hadn't won a race all year.
Yeah. It was that forgettable.
Damn. Yeah. Which is amazing considering it was a remarkable win.
Yeah, it was an incredible win, but it's been forgotten about now because we talk about Andretti and we talk about the bust of a season. The F1 news, the F1 mess, the fact they're being gaslighted from being on the F1 grid for next year. And all of that shenanigans about what happened with Alex Rossi at Mid-Ohio. We talk about Grosjean and the fact that, you know, we love Grosjean, but it's not working out for him this season than Andretti. And, well, Devlin's highlight of the race this weekend was Conor Daly saying he needs to be booted out of this series. He's an idiot.
Oh, oof.
Which,
that's rough.
Unfortunately, that's not the first time someone said that about Devlin this season. And it's hard to argue against it at this point, unfortunately.
I will say, Mid-Ohio, completely blameless. That's the irony of it all.
Yeah. That was the one where he was clean, which I thought was funny more than anything else. So I was like, oh, this is the one where he's okay, apparently. Who knew? It's like Alex Rossi's win here was like the cherry on top of a sundae made of dog meat. It's very, very weird that, you know, yeah, this is absolutely something worth celebrating for Andretti this year. And yeah, good for him. But I'm honestly shocked the whole celebration wasn't more awkward because it probably should have been given that their season's been an unmitigated disaster. More like what are you taking away from Andretti this season if things roughly stay where they're at this season?
You still have Colton Herta on the books.
Yay.
You're going to get Kyle Kirkwood back. You're going to get a redo on the obvious move that you probably should have made at the start. And Romain Grosjean hasn't completely lost all his value and burned all his bridges and all that stuff. Maybe you consider, like, thank you, Harding and Steinbrenner. It's been great having you, but we need to downscale. Maybe you consider finally biting the bullet and going back to three cars. I don't know what comes next. But there's still pieces there, but... And something's got to shake up.
And they're adamant to stay at four. Like, I don't know why. They don't need four cars. Like, what is four cars giving them right now that Penske and Ganassi aren't dealing with three and Jimmy Johnson? And at least Johnson's good on the ovals.
And at least when Penske was a four car operation, like, all four of those cars were still reasonably competitive.
Yeah, like, up until the end of Helio's prime, like, there was still a justifiable reason to run four cars. Like, you can't say that with Andretti at the moment, because they've had at least one car be complete horseshit for a good half decade. If we've forgotten the ballad of Zach Veach,
who is now driving on dirt tracks at a short track near you.
Or, you know, the last year of James Hinchcliffe when he was riding Hurt.
Oh, jeez.
You know, like, they don't need four cars at this point. And right now, their most consistent driver and the one that's given them the most leverage over the last half decade, the guy that won him a 500 and got him close to the Aster Cup twice, is now leaving. And not on particularly good terms either.
It's wild. And then, of course, before we get into the post-event infraction. Now, a lot of the reaction around this has nothing to do with the points and the fines. It's about the fact that he kept the win despite the technical infringement. And we are, like, not even like 2 weeks removed from Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch being thrown out of a NASCAR Cup Series race when they were first and second on the road for a piece of tape that was that made the bumper of the car too thick. I got some insight on this. It, like I said, it's with the drinks package. I got this report. This is again from Marshall Pruitt at Racer. It's common for teams like Andretti Autosport to outfit their cars with Camelback style fluid bladders that are filled with somewhere between 70 to 120 ounces of each driver's preferred liquid. As the bladders are occasionally mounted in remote areas in the car, pit crews sometimes fill or empty the bladders of the pump. In rare situations, teams have forgotten to drain the bladders prior to going through post-race technical inspection. But the thing was that, you know, why does Rossi get to keep the win with a car that didn't meet the letter of the law from a technical perspective and the way that they achieved that minimum weight? It was actually overweight. It wasn't underweight. It was overweight. But there is a kind of shitty precedence for this. Do you remember 2015 Milwaukee Mile, the last IndyCar race we had in Milwaukee Mile? Sebastian Bourdais beat the brakes out of the field.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it turns out that car was not... it didn't pass all the requirements, but he kept the win. Do you remember 2014 at Houston, one of those wild races where Carlos Huertas, of all people, won out of nowhere? Yeah, that car was not legal by the letter of the law. So, by that precedent, Alexander Rossi's win has grounds to stand, even if it's not necessarily, you know, the right or sporting thing to do to let that stand. Trey, what do you make of that?
Look, I'd be a complete hypocrite to denounce it because I remember James Hinchcliffe's domed skid in Texas a few years back, where that epic race in Texas where Ray Hall beats him by a fist pump and change, and Hinchcliffe's second was flagged and he lost, I think, 20 out of the 40 points he would have gotten for it because his domed skid was too far worn.
Oh, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, that was one I remember, obviously, for being a Hinch fan. Obviously, you remember these things. But, this seems to be a pattern in American motorsport in general where, you know, minor technical infringements maybe don't get you DQ'd, because I think
NASCAR had to be shamed into doing it, basically. And now that they have a new car, they're just like, if you break the rules, we're going to take wins away, and like we're taking away huge chunks of points.
I don't know how I feel about it. Like, it's pretty clear. It's like a sprint. Like, I remember Shadyanne Fraser-Pryce in track and field athletics getting popped for taking a pill that was to aid her with toothache. It wasn't performance enhancing, but it was on the band.
Do you remember Matthias Ekstrom in the water bottle?
Oh no, I don't remind me.
I'm sorry. When did we think about that? When did we think about when did that come up recently? Was that at Sao Paulo? Was that at Sao Paulo last year? In F1?
Remind me. But
Matthias Ekstrom in a water bottle.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like it's not necessarily performance enhancing, and in this case, clearly it did not aid Alex Rossi's performance that much. I mean, okay, yeah. Like ballast to make weight is a very common thing in Formula One. Obviously, having that where you want it and having smaller drivers generally is, you know, a gains for an advantage. I don't like people fucking with water bottles. I don't like that because it could be dangerous. And I don't like, you know, things like that that could compromise the driver's health. We saw AJ Allmendinger after the NASCAR race and the doubleheader almost pass out from heat exhaustion. I know NASCARs are a bit different because they get very, very hot inside their cars over the course of a race. But I don't like fucking with water bottles. I get it. Rossi probably didn't gain an advantage in the race because of it, or technically his car was legal, in inverted commas, during it. So I guess I can't be too mad about him getting to keep his win. But what's the point of having a technical directive if somebody breaks it, they're allowed to have their results stand? You've gained an unfair advantage by having your car hooked up the way it's been hooked up. But, you know. I don't know what... I don't know. It's a pickle, is how I would describe it. And I'm not entirely sure what the right answer is on that one.
It's a strange thing, because with IndyCar being a spec Formula series, like, you don't have that kind of, like, creative messing about that you had or used to have and still kind of have in NASCAR, where the only sport, real form of motorsport other than on four wheels that has more technical gray areas is Formula One, that kind of that level of like creative freedom to plunge into the black like that. You don't normally see, like, you know, the body panel, like the arrows all wrong and all that stuff. It's just, I don't know what it would take. I mean, I definitely get it. I would hate it if Rossi lost a win like that, but, you know, there is another driver who probably feels like maybe they should have won, especially if the car was running out of order.
Yeah.
Should we talk about that driver?
Yeah, Christian Lundgaard, everybody. Woo!
Alpine Academy continuing to churn out W's for other entities. Christian Lundgaard finished second. He brought the same setup that he made his debut with last year. When he was still in Formula 2, he got his first podium. He got his Ray Hall Letterman landing his first podium in over a year. And now he has a 27-point lead in the Rookie of the Year standings ahead of David Malukas. Callum Ilott is also in the mix. And remember, he missed a race, but he's done so impressively, quietly running near the top 10, quietly getting into second-round qualifying, and again, with a single-car team that he's got a contract extension on the table with Yonkos Hollinger Racing. Remember, up to a point, like, we were talking about him, like, potentially going to Ganassi to fill one of the voids left behind in the whole Alex Palou saga.
Yeah, people like him. People seem to be very high on Ilott and Lundgaard in the paddock right now. And this is the point I was going to get to here. I mean, David Malukas has gotten a lot of positive attention in the IndyCar series this year. As of all the rookies, I reckon Malukas has been the most active out there. We talked about his Rookie of the Year efforts in the 500. He's very popular with Marshall Pruitt. He's a very charismatic and likable young man. You know, he's gotten a lot of the hype this season. Not a lot of people have talked about Christian Lundgaard, who very quietly has gone about his business. We know RLL's not been good as a team as a whole this year. They've struggled across the board on that one. But This was, as you said earlier in the show, RJ, the first real breakout rookie performance of the year from anyone in the field this year. And that was a monster second from Lundgaard. Not only the second, but the fact he was staying with Alex Rossi all the way through. Very, very impressive stuff.
Yeah. So they've obviously gotten to, and we know that they have recent ties, obviously Lundgaard, a former Alpine prospect. Like I said in the last show, remember when Alpine had Oscar Piastri, Christian Lundgaard, and Zhou Guanyu all under the same roof? And we were having debates about how Zhou Guanyu is doing really impressive, but Christian Lundgaard might be better. And, you know, he just ended up getting lost in a sea of being forgotten, being the recipient of some bad mechachrome quality control roulette. And Callum Ilott, you know, friend of the show, Hazel Southwell, put out a Twitter question. Like, who is the one driver in recent years who obviously had the talent but never got a break in Formula One? And the one game that kept coming up more than anybody's Callum Ilott.
Oh, yeah. That name was the most common name I saw in the replies to that. So this is the state of play. I was like, this is an interesting pattern here. Callum Ilott is the most recent example of guy who was clearly good enough for F1 but just didn't have the luck for and the funding go their way. Christian Lundgaard got dropped out of the Alpine Academy, went to IndyCar, and has now hit the ground running and has got a good chance of being Rookie of the Year by the time it's all said and done. Like, these were two guys who was in the F1 bubble and didn't make it. Like, and if you read Marshall Pruitt's silly season piece that came out last week after Iowa, where the first 200 words leaps off the page, where he says essentially there's been more mutual interest between IndyCar team bosses and the Formula 2 grid than there's ever been in an IndyCar silly season. Yeah. Basically, Pruitt said anyone in the top 10 has had at least a conversation about it.
If you don't have an existing link to an F1 team, you've likely been in touch with IndyCar teams. And there's two names that stuck out. Marcus Armstrong, member of the Ferrari Driver Academy, was actually in the window last season.
Mm.
Remember when he showed up at Nashville?
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, he showed up in Nashville. And Marcus Armstrong, again, another driver who's had... It's clear that he has the talent, but his luck has never batched that. And he sits in the standings, and it's looking likely like he's going to be looking on his way out. Then there is the Formula 2 championship leader, Felipe Drugovich, who leads the championship by a large margin. He's still got Teo Pourchaire and Logan Sargeant to contend with, but he does bring a lot of independent backing. He is not tied to a junior program. Right. And, you know, this is one of those cases where certainly, you know, it's happened in the past that the champion in the top feeder series going into Formula One that doesn't get an F1 drive, you know, they can find opportunities in North America. We saw that with Sebastian Bourdais. We saw that with Bruno Genchero once upon a time. So Dre, is this another instance of Formula One's loss becoming IndyCar's gain?
To a degree, I think it's a very interesting state of play at the moment. Because, as we mentioned, Lingard and I are the walking proofs that there's obviously talent to be had out there that is very good and if nurtured correctly can succeed. Ilott and Lingard have got a lot of whispers about their future. Like as you mentioned earlier, Ilott was linked with the number 10. Ganassi. Apparently, there are multiple teams that are scouting Lingard, maybe for 2024. Now, I mean, in a year or change, the year and changes time, they clearly like what they see from Lingard. And this is an IndyCar predominantly podcast on this occasion, but we also, of course, talk F1, so we can pivot into that a little bit here. The state of play in junior racing right now in Europe is completely busted. And I don't mean that in a way. It is busted in a bad way. Yeah. I spoke with someone who knows that paddock very well and has said openly that we are talking 4 to 6 million euros now for a top-end Formula 2 seat per year.
It's a lot.
The inflation and obviously the conflict in Ukraine has jacked up the price even further than it already was. We are talking 3 million euros even for a Formula 3 seat at the moment. And people are getting outbid for 3 million euro seats in Formula 3. I'll give you a hint. One of them is the current W Series champion. And that's the state of play in the European junior ladder. And unfortunately, this coincides with Formula 1 having its biggest boom in youth talent probably since 2001, where it's like we've had in the last half decade and change Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, George Russell, Alex Albon, Lance Stroll, and Pierre
all
Gasly.
All of them are on long-term deals.
Yeah, like
all of them on long-term deals. Their futures are pretty much secure. Yes, even Lance Stroll. Even if it is just because he is the boss's son.
Right.
He has got some security because of that. But, you know, to this point, I'm looking at the Drivers' Championship. Marcus Armstrong just slipped out of the top 10, but he's still sure. within striking distance as behind Yuri Vips. And I'm sure there's people in America who would love to just, you know, paper over those cracks. I look at this championship, I see Drugovich, Enzo Fittipaldi is obviously a Indy legacy. You know, there's some good talent to be had here.
Logan Sargeant, Ayumu Iwasa, you know.
Yeah, like they're already talking about like who's going to be Takuma Sato's successor. It may not even be Iwasa. But you want to make this point, like, because I've made it before, like, it is cool that they are going out and finding the best talent from overseas, which is great. I also want them to find that balance of getting that along with promoting your homegrown talent, because we are starting to reach a point where Indy Lights is suffering promotes, given like Linus Lundqvist is having a fantastic second season. Like low key, he's been one of the, he hasn't been like to the same level of dominance as Kyle Kirkwood, but he has had a fantastic career so far in American junior Formula racing. He's won the Formula Regional Championship, and he leads the Indy Lights standings by quite a large margin over Andretti Autosport's rookie Hunter McElroy. But Lundqvist isn't really in with a serious chance of promotion, at least not as much as you might think. He hasn't been hyped as much, and
nowhere near.
You know, then you start to get in the problem like, is IndyCar starting to have a talent bottleneck problem?
I think it is, and this is despite the fact that IndyCar is expanding. I mean, we're at 27 full-time cars this year. Well, 26 now, because sadly, it's like the 11's been parked for the rest of the year over at Foyt. But we were at 27 full-time seats earlier this year, and there is still talk there might be more. Like, Dale Coyne is tempted to run a third car next year. We know McLaren are running a third car full-time next year. Who drives it? Well, that's anyone's guess at this point. But point is that the teams are expanding. Like, there is going to be certainly one more full-time car next year, maybe two, depending on if anybody brings enough funding over. There's rumors that Marcus Armstrong might bring cash with him to run a third car at Dale Coyne, for example. So,
yeah. I've heard him linked to Foyt. I've heard Drugovich linked to Foyt, which Drugovich, you can do better.
Tom Blomqvist has been mentioned as well at Mayer Shank.
Tom Blomqvist, yeah.
If they don't tie Helio down to a new deal, like Helio apparently wants to go on into his age 48 season.
Jesus Christ.
Which is crazy.
Jimmy Johnson even says he wants to come back. I think he wants to come back for one more shot at the Indianapolis 500, because the first time didn't go so well, and that's really why he's here.
Sure. You know, that's the real reason. Like, we're not stupid. We know that's the real reason why he's here. Yeah. And look, in other words, we could be hovering around 30 full-time cars next year, or certainly close, if everything goes to plan and the money and the engineers are found for it. And despite that, the only Indy Lights driver that's getting hype right now is the one that is going to get a mandatory part-time gig next year if he wins the title anyway, and that's Linus Lundqvist.
Don't forget Stingray Robb.
Stingray Robb is in the conversation, but according to Pruitt's post, it's nowhere near on the same level.
Yeah.
It's looking like Lundqvist is that dude in Indy Lights this year.
Oh, and he is.
And anybody else is going to be a bit of a struggle. Like Mahunter McElroy, Kiffin Simpson might be a year away for Chip Ganassi. From, you know, Rasmussen is not having as good a time as he was at the start of the year, where he was getting hyped up as one of those sorts of, you know,
Kiffin Simpson. Kiffin Simpson is kind of a long-term project. You know him as the Cayman Islands guy.
Yeah, Barbados, I believe. I think it is. Cayman. You know, Commonwealth Games, it's part of the theme. The story is essentially that, you know, there just isn't the same level of hype for Indy Lights graduates. And Formula 2 in its grid is twerking, and IndyCar is twerking back, and they like what they see. They have the proof of concept on the grid right now with Lingard and Ilott. Yeah. And they might want more. I mean, Felipe Drugovic is a brilliant driver. There's no getting around that. You know, I can understand the appeal for someone like him, or for Marcus Armstrong, or for, you know, the incredibly cutthroat world of European junior racing, where F1 level talent is falling by the wayside and has opportunities to be picked up. Well, I mean, when that's happening, it's hard to resist if you're an IndyCar team boss. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think there's an easy fix. And, you know, like I said, like, how can we have 27 full-time cars and we're still struggling to for IndyCar to promote its own?
It's
wild.
And I really hope that, like, down the road, we do get some positive growth in terms of Indy Lights participation. I think that's a platform that really deserves a larger stage, but that's going to be a very difficult discussion to have. We're going back to Nashville. We're racing over a freaking bridge again.
Bridge week.
It's bridge week. There have been changes made to the turn of the circuit. They moved the restart zone. They have repaved some of the bumps. They have widened some of the apexes. I am hoping that the race will be entertaining. Maybe not as much of a shit show, because you know me, I love a good shit show. But Ave and I can recognize that, like, yeah, sometimes it can be a bit too much.
Sure.
Six drivers in with a shot at the championship still.
Oh, yeah. Six of him, 52 points. Max Pillow on the outside looking in.
Joseph Newgarden's big opportunity to win his home race.
He needs it. He's running out of time to land a big counterpunch. Like clock's ticking. We're down to four rounds left.
Can you imagine if Marcus Ericsson wins this again?
Oh God, it could be a title winning race win if he can get this one again. Hopefully he's not sent into orbit this time. It would probably help if it was just a smoother race for him in general to last year where his car took flight and he had 9 cautions. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. As mentioned, IndyCar at Nashville this weekend. It's bridge week. And hopefully it'll run a little bit
smoother. It's the world's largest outdoor bachelorette party!
Bitchin'! So yeah, next week we'll be talking Formula E, and it's London E Prix. I heard the Butcher is back in the winner's circle, so that'll be fun to talk about, no doubt. We'll also have the return of MotoGP this weekend!
We're back!
The British Grand Prix this weekend on free-to-air on ITV1 in the UK. Brits, watch it, please. Like, give Dorna more of a reason to give away races on free-to-air. Everybody wins. So go watch it on ITV1, the big boy channel. No British touring cars needed here, okay? Go watch MotoGP this weekend at Silverstone and all of that. So we'll be talking about MotoGP there as well. And yeah, we were talking a bit of Formula E as well from last week at the London E Prix. So that'll all be next week on the show. Check that out if you when you get a chance. You know where to find us at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, Facebook, YouTube, Motorsport101, Instagram, Motorsport101 Pod, Twitter, Motorsport_101, website, motorsport101.com for all of that, and our Patreon on there as well, Motorsport101. Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been RJ O'Connell. And until next time, sign out.
Later, y'all. We're gonna be racing over a bridge again.
Again! I love it. Bridge Week. Oh, the over or under 50 mentions of the bridge during the race?
I'm going over. It's not even clashing with the Olympics this time.